From the latest on Caribbean cruises to kosher safaris, pilgrimages to Jewish Eastern Europe and award-winning wines and international cuisine in sun-drenched Tel Aviv. Sit back and enjoy the trip with the travel edition of the Jerusalem Post podcast.
Welcome to episode 6 of the podcast. I'm Mark Gordon and this is my travel buddy David Harris.
Hi everyone, we've got a packed show for you, so we're really going to get on with it very quickly. We're going to head to Dubrovnik in Croatia and a very special museum in Tel Aviv.
And as we always do, we're going to start with a couple of quiz questions to whet your appetite about today's destinations. We'll give you the answers at the end of the podcast.
Question 1. Dubrovnik was known by another name for hundreds of years starting in the 7th century. What was that name?
Question 2. One of today's destinations is the Museum of Adeni Jews in Tel Aviv. But in which country is Aden?
The budget airline Wizz Air just launched its latest route between Tel Aviv and Abu Dhabi in the United Arab Emirates. Initially, there are 3 flights weekly, but that will soon increase to a daily service. Mark was at Ben Gurion Airport in time for the arrival of the first flight from Abu Dhabi.
It's been a year and a half since I was last at the airport, and I can tell you it's great to be back. I'm approaching Terminal 3 now. I have to tell you, I've not seen many people. It still has that ghostly feel to it, as though no one is using the airport. I think there's about a dozen flights a day going. But over the next few months, we should really see this ramp up. And with the green status granted to Israel in Abu Dhabi and a number of other countries, this time next month, I think this airport will be absolutely buzzing. Walking down the famous Ben-Gurion access way into Terminal 3, that long walk, the posters have changed. It's still very empty here, but as we get closer to the terminal, you can feel the travel. It's coming back. It's coming home. Travel's coming home. I'm now stood by Cafe Elan, looking out the window, the familiar sign of someone with their tefillin on next to me, shuckling away. I'm just looking at the expanse of Ben-Gurion in the plains, waiting for the plane to come in. In very un-Israeli fashion, it's going to be 10 minutes early. The terminal's still very empty, even around here. All the seating has been spaced with signs saying for your own health. Every single flight seems to be on time, a symptom of the fact there aren't many flights here. If you look down the board, London, Madrid, New York, Batumi, Paphos, very limited list, Dubai. A whole lot has changed since people last came to this airport with the Abraham Accords. There are 3-4 flights to Dubai leaving, 2 to Abu Dhabi, names that we never saw beforehand. It's 10:15 on Sunday. The first Wizz Air flight from Abu Dhabi has landed, and as it pulled into the terminal, the pilot opened the front windows and put out 2 flags. Really nice sight. The chief executive of Wizz Air Abu Dhabi, Kizvan Shaikh, will come into the terminal and give a press conference.
Wizz Air Abu Dhabi has landed today for the first time in Tel Aviv, arriving from Abu Dhabi. It's a very historic moment for the airline, but most importantly, a great moment for all our customers in Israel and the United Arab Emirates. We are connecting, as starting today, the capital of the UAE with Israel. And the capital of the UAE also connects the Northern Emirates to all our customers from Israel. It's a wonderful day today, and it's all about Wizz Air Abu Dhabi connecting people at affordable prices in a very sustainable way with the most modern aircraft behind me on the ground here in Tel Aviv. We have all the safety and security measures on board to ensure a very safe travel experience for all our new customers flying in between Tel Aviv and Abu Dhabi.
The visiting party have arrived. They stood there taking photos at the moment. 2 Abu Dhabi nationals in full dress, the chief executive of Wizz and 2 of the cabin crew are holding signs in Hebrew, English and Arabic saying Wizz Air first flight from Abu Dhabi. It's a very, very historic sign.
Back in the 1980s, my mum and dad went to Dubrovnik, which at the time was in what was then Yugoslavia, still a communist country. And they assumed that there was very little in the way of access to Jewish books. So they went to a local store in Manchester, England, purchased some prayer books, Siddurim, and the Chumash, the Torah book. And they brought a suitcase full to Dubrovnik. They got to the old synagogue in the town and they were about to present this suitcase to the two, three people who were sitting on the steps of the synagogue. And the three older people burst into tears and they said, it's not the religious books we need, it's the Jewish people, because the community was in decline. But Dubrovnik has a rich Jewish tradition and heritage. And we spoke about that with Anna Hernich, who's the director of the Dubrovnik Tourism Board. But first, she told us a little bit about herself.
Basically, I came on this position just a month before the pandemic started, and it was a very challenging period for me all this year. So now, both professionally and personally, as for probably all of us, but we are fine. We are getting to the more optimistical times, I hope, in front of us. Before I came to the tourist board, I was working in one of the local DMCs for 15 years on a different position. So basically, I can say that for the whole of my life, I was in the tourism industry.
Can you tell us a little bit about Dubrovnik and its history?
The old city of Dubrovnik has been on the list of UNESCO World Cultural Heritage since 1979. Dubrovnik is definitely a city monument. So on every corner, you can feel actually history and the spirit of the old times. One of the main attractions definitely are the Dubrovnik City Walls, which are around 2 kilometers long. Many tourists, actually we can say everyone who comes to Dubrovnik visits the city walls. Dubrovnik used to be a republic, so in the year 1358 Dubrovnik became a republic, a city-state, and it entered its golden age in 16th century. The prosperity was based on maritime and trade.
As far as our listeners and people who read the Jerusalem Post are concerned, one of the things that they look for as they travel is also if there's any form of Jewish heritage to a city or a country. Many people who left Spain and the Iberian Peninsula in the late 15th century after 1492 and 1497 came in the direction of Dubrovnik. What sort of influence did this immigration have on the city?
When you come to Dubrovnik, you can also do a Jewish walking tour, which shows you all the highlights of the Jewish culture and the heritage of Dubrovnik. So one of the very interesting facts is that today we still have the street, which is called in Croatian Judioska Street, which means Jewish street. One of the highlights of this walking tour is definitely the synagogue, the Jewish fountain, and the Jewish cemetery. So these are the highlights of the walking tour. And evidence of Dubrovnik's Jewish history is revealed by one of the Europe's oldest functioning synagogues. Actually, after Prague, it is the second oldest synagogue still in use in Europe. Also, this fountain I was mentioning, it's very interesting. It used to be located inside the city walls, and later on it was removed to the Pillar Gate, so the main entrance to Dubrovnik.
Dubrovnik has been the backdrop for many films and TV productions, and can people go and visit those sites if they want to?
Of course, yes. So in recent years, Dubrovnik has been a favorite in the world of well-known locations for capturing attractive serials and films. Definitely the most well-known HBO production and the most watched series ever was filmed in Dubrovnik. Of course, we are talking about the Game of Thrones. It was filmed from 2011 to 2018, so the season from the second to the eighth season. There are really many Game of Thrones tours when you come to Dubrovnik. Of course, this is for the fans of the series. Of course, this is one of the must-dos when you come to Dubrovnik. So also do the Game of Thrones tour. There was also a filming of the Star Wars, Robin Hood. So definitely the Browniq is recognized as a popular filming location. Even last year when we were all in a kind of a lockdown, one way or another, we had also some shootings. So in October 2020, the Browniq was location for filming the Islander 2. And the unbearable weight of massive talent with Nicolas Cage and Pedro Pascal.
After a hard day following the Game of Thrones tour, where can our listeners go for a good meal and maybe a good night out in Dubrovnik?
Dubrovnik really has so much to offer in terms of gastronomy. I would recommend everyone to go on Stradun on our main street to have a glass of wine or a cocktail during the sunset. This is definitely something very special, impressive, especially in the times of, summer times when everything is so live and full of people. Although Dubrovnik is a city for all seasons and has its charm also during the winter times as well, when it's completely different pictures, so then you have much more tranquil and a peaceful vision of the destination. Regarding our gastronomics, well, we eat a lot of fish, vegetables, olive oil is definitely one of the main ingredients in our everyday, I can say, meals. There are many international restaurants as well in Dubrovnik, as everywhere. Sushi became like the integral part of each cuisine in the world, I would say. But in Dubrovnik, definitely you can taste excellent fish, excellent seafood. The Stone area near Dubrovnik is very famous for the oysters. So this is also something you should taste once you're in Dubrovnik. So it really offers a huge variety of perfect tastes, I would say, which you shouldn't miss once you're here.
Do you have vegetarian options for people who maybe want to avoid oysters and ham and so on?
Vegetarian scene, gastronomic scene in Dubrovnik is growing, I can say, as well as the international cuisine. So definitely there are many, many options for the vegetarians as well.
I used to play a lot of chess when I was younger, and I remember there was something called the Dubrovnik chess set. Can you tell me a bit about the link between Dubrovnik and chess?
Yes, yeah, so in the 1950, actually, the chess Olympiad took place in Dubrovnik. But what is even more interesting is that the chess is firstly documented in Dubrovnik already in 1422. To be honest, this was also a new information for me as well. I didn't know that it has such a long history. So the Olympiad had 84 chess players representing 16 nations who played a total of 480 games. And the Yugoslav team, which was the former country in that time, won the golden medal. So it's interesting. So then actually was the time when was the legendary Dubrovnik chess set born.
Anna, is there anything else that you feel we haven't asked you that you're desperate to tell our listeners?
Yeah, well, what we didn't mention yet, there are things that I would like to emphasize and actually recommend to our potential visitors where to go and what to visit. So one of them is definitely Franciscan Monastery. And what is especially interesting about the Franciscan Monastery is that you can visit there one of the oldest active pharmacies in Europe, which is operating since 1317. And cosmetic products of the Franciscan pharmacy still uses the old recipes, and they can be both in that pharmacy, which is a quite interesting souvenir to take with you. It has a great story and it's a very high quality. When you are in the old city, you can still, I would suggest you not to walk only down the Stradun, down the main street, but also go visit the small side streets where you can really feel the history and where you can feel actually the everyday life, because there are still about 1,000 people living within the city walls, and there you can see how the real local life looks like. And definitely one of the things which I always recommend to our guests to visit is the island of Lokrum, which is also known as the Garden of Dubrovnik. It's just 10 minutes boat ride from the old harbor, which definitely makes it a perfect getaway from the rush during the summer day. We also didn't mention, and it's very interesting, and especially in today's context of fighting with the pandemic, is that Dubrovnik set up the first quarantine system already in 1377. And there is the complex of Lazareti, which used to be the quarantine. And today they are a creative district of Dubrovnik, where different events, exhibitions are taking place. So this is something definitely very, very special and interesting to visit and interesting a little bit to explore before arriving to Dubrovnik.
Wow. Anna Hrnic, thank you so much for such an expansive explanation of what is a truly, I mean, both Mark and I, our parents went to visit and we know from their stories what an incredible place it is. And we hope ourselves one day to join you as well and see it for ourselves. Thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much.
Thanks, Anna.
It's a pleasure talking to you.
Dubrovnik Fact File. This summer, Dubrovnik will be connected with more than 60 destinations. El Al will fly every Tuesday from Tel Aviv until October the 26th, while Croatia Airways offers charter flights into Dubrovnik on Wednesdays from June the 2nd to October the 6th. The distance from Dubrovnik Airport to the Old Town is 13 miles. It's about a 25 to 30 minute drive by taxi or shuttle bus. Dubrovnik offers 49 hotels, 15 of which are 5-star and 11 4-star. $1 will buy you 6.41 Croatian kuna. Dubrovnik has a Mediterranean climate with hot, calm summers and mild, rainy winters. Average summer temperatures are 26 degrees centigrade, 79 degrees Fahrenheit, and average winter temperatures are around 11 degrees centigrade, 52 degrees Fahrenheit. Traditional Dubrovnik cuisine is based on fresh, locally grown vegetables and fruits, quality meat and fish, with as little spice as possible and plenty of olive oil. For details of kosher food, contact Chabad of Croatia in Zagreb.
And now the latest travel news headlines brought to you by the travel edition of the Jerusalem Post podcast. Bahrain's national airline, Gulf Air, will begin direct flights between Manama and Tel Aviv in June. Israel and Bahrain signed a deal to recognise each other's green passports.
The Israeli Ministry of Health issued a general warning against non-essential overseas travel. It also named 7 countries where there is a high coronavirus infection rate: Ukraine, Ethiopia, Brazil, South Africa, India, Mexico and Turkey. This warning includes those vaccinated against COVID-19.
Boutique Israeli hotel group Brown Hotels is expanding its operations in Greece with 6 new hotels in Athens. The Jerusalem Post reports there'll also be a new beach resort in Carinthia.
Europe's first kosher eco-hotel opens at the end of May in Kent, England. Sadeh Farm Hotel will work to educate its guests about the environment. Tel Aviv is not just about the beaches, fabulous food and nightlife. The city has great museums, galleries, theatres and some real hidden gems. One gem is the Aden Jewish Heritage Museum on Lilienblum Street. To find out more, we spoke with curator Sarah Ansbacher.
I'm originally from London, moved to Israel just over 13 years ago. I'm a writer and I also work at the Aden Jewish Heritage Museum in Tel Aviv.
The museum is about Adeni Jews. Is there a major difference between Adeni Jews and Yemenite Jews?
Yes, there is. The history of the Jews of Aden is unique. It's apart from the rest of Yemen. But saying that, even within Yemen, it's not entirely that everyone from Yemen is all the same. You've got different groupings, depends when you whether you come from the north or the south. But when it comes to the Jews of Aden, it's different again. Aden is a port city. The history of the Jewish community there goes back well over 1,000 years, at least in terms of documented history, and it could go back even further. But from letters found in the Cairo Geniza and the archive in Cairo, we know that in the 11th and 12th centuries, the Jewish community in Aden was an influential one. Then in the centuries that followed, successive conflicts, invasions, the community declined. In 1839, the British arrived and it became the British colony of Aden. When they arrived, what they discovered was that the entire population of Aden just numbered 550 people, of which 250 were Jewish. After the colony was established, it attracted people from all around the region looking for new opportunities and for work, and so too of the Jewish communities from the surrounding areas. But for the Jews who came to Aden, there was an additional attraction in that there was no persecution. There was no dhimmi status. So they were able to live there with the rights like every other community, Muslim, Hindu, Christian, living in Aden. And so you had Jewish people who came in from Yemen, also Iraq, India, Turkey, a few from Persia, and they integrated with the existing community, so it all became one community, the Adani community. And because of this, it has its very own distinct culture and character. And the customs are a blend of Yemenite, Mizrahi, in other words, Eastern, and also Sephardi traditions, in other words, Spanish and Portuguese. So it's a blend of them all and some unique customs that have developed within the region and within the culture, also a strong British influence as well.
How do you tell that story in the museum?
Through pictures, we have artifacts, which are household objects. We have documents. We have a map of the Jewish quarter. Most of the Jewish community lived within five streets, so we have the names of most of the families who were living there in the 40s, which is lovely for community members. They're able to see where they lived or their grandparents, so forth. We go around in a little bit of a route, telling a history, like an overall history, and then through pictures showing how life was like, education, weddings. And we also have a section which covers the riots of 1947, which was really the beginning of the end for the community. In 1947, 3 days after the United Nations passed the vote in favor of partition and the establishment of the State of Israel, violent riots broke out in Aden, and 87 members of the Jewish community were brutally murdered, many more injured, many lost homes, businesses. And that really, after that, the community declined. Within the museum, we tell the history in the main from 1839, from the time of the rejuvenation of the Jewish community after the establishment of the colony, until 1967, when the last members of the community left, which was when the British also left, and Aden then became part of an independent Yemen.
Where is the museum and why is it there?
The museum is situated in the Neve Tzedek neighborhood of Tel Aviv, which is a beautiful neighborhood. It's worth coming there just to walk around the picturesque streets. But the reason why it's there is because within Neve Tzedek, there's a synagogue, the Kol Yehuda Synagogue, which is where the museum is situated on the ground floor of it. That synagogue is an Adani synagogue. In 1925, the leader of the Jewish community in Aden, the president at the time, whose name was Yehuda Menachem Messer, came on a visit to Tel Aviv. And while he was there, he bought this plot of land and he designated it should be a synagogue for the community. He returned to Aden. Unfortunately, he passed away about a year or so later. But in 1938, his granddaughter and her husband built the synagogue, and it was built in his memory. So it's called Kol Yehuda because his name was Yehuda. And just over 8 years ago, their grandson, Danny, together with a cousin, came up with the idea to set up a museum to preserve the history and heritage of the community. And since this space downstairs was empty, they set up the museum there.
As we're recording this, your book is in the process of being published. I think packages of books are on their way to you as we speak. Tell us a little bit about the book that you've written.
The book is called Passage from Aden, Stories from a Little Museum in Tel Aviv. And it was actually the writing of a novel that first brought me to the museum. So it's a story within a story for me, how this book came about. I originally walked into the museum to do research, and through a series of quite amazing events, 6 months later, I was offered a job. I wasn't certain at first what to expect, but I accepted anyway because I'd really fallen in love with the museum from the first time I visited. And almost from day one, I discovered that the place had a certain magic and that the visitors were diverse. Now, what I mean by magic, it's not in terms of a night at the museum, but in terms that when people came into the museum, they'd share their stories. or often something would trigger an interesting conversation. And it wasn't just members of the community from Aden, it was people who had been born in Yemen or their family had, people who whose families or themselves had come from Jewish communities around the Middle East, children of Holocaust survivors, Israelis from all different walks of life. But in addition to that, tourists who also came from the most diverse backgrounds, from Germany, Poland, the Far East, Christians, Muslims, other faiths, people who had no faith, but an interesting story. I began writing these stories down at the beginning just for myself because I didn't want to forget them. They were, some of the exchanges were just so enlightening, so fascinating. Some of the stories were periods of history or stories I'd never heard before. So I made a note of everything, and then I started sharing a few with friends, and then later on sharing more of them on Facebook with a wider group of friends. And people kept saying, you should write a book about this, you should write a book about this. And it'd been an idea in the back of my mind, but I kept saying, someday, yeah, someday, someday I will. Anyway, someday came in March, April of 2020, during the first lockdown. Suddenly, I was home and kind of floundering. What's going to happen? When are we going to be able to open the museum up again? And I started compiling those stories, and I found I had over 40,000 words and started putting together a book. It gives a history of the Jewish community of Aden, but it's far more than that. It covers other periods of Jewish history. It covers discussions with Germans about anti-Semitism and the Holocaust, a discussion I had with two tourists, a Christian and a Muslim, up in the synagogue, discussing the similarities and differences between Judaism, Islam, Christianity, discussions that I've never really had before. It was just amazing.
Where can people get details of how to visit the museum? And obviously, where can people buy your book?
We have a Facebook page. Type in Aden Jewish Heritage Museum. It'll bring up the Facebook page and all the details. And in terms of the book, so the book is called Passage from Aden, and it's available on Amazon, Book Depository in Israel. Can order it directly from me.
Sarah Ansbacher from the Aden Jewish Heritage Museum, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Naveed Sadek in Tel Aviv, Fact File. El Al flies to Ben Gurion Airport from most major European cities, plus New York, Boston, Chicago, Johannesburg, Miami, Las Vegas, Los Angeles, San Francisco, and Toronto. Air Canada, British Airways, Cathay, Delta, United, and Virgin all fly direct to Tel Aviv. Taxis from Ben Gurion International Airport to Tel Aviv take around 25 minutes and cost between 120 and 200 shekels. Trains from Ben Gurion head direct to Tel Aviv and Jerusalem for around 15 shekels. The nearest kosher restaurants to the museum are Rendezvous, Mito's Street Food, and Goshen. The currency is the Israeli shekel, and 100 shekels are worth $31. Hotels near the museum include the David Intercontinental, the Dan Panorama, and Montefiore Hotel.
Our thanks to Sarah Ansbacher, Anna Chernich, and special thanks to Klapa Cash for their wonderful Dubrovnik melody, Vinska Kontra Danza.
And we encourage you to subscribe to this podcast. If you've enjoyed it, please give us a 5-star rating and, of course, write a lovely, lovely review. Thank you.
And now the answers from our quiz. Question number one. Dubrovnik was known by another name for hundreds of years, starting in the 7th century. What was that name? And that name was Raguza.
Question two. One of today's destinations is the Museum of Adeni Jews in Tel Aviv, but in which country is Aden? The answer, Yemen.
We really hope you enjoyed that podcast. Join us again in a couple of weeks for another travel edition of the Jerusalem Post podcast.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.